From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We've got to look at our budget situation and do whatever we need to do to address it. And then, you know, we've got to also consult with the General Assembly on what we will do for next year's budget. There's no doubt that any estimates that were made even 2 months ago would be, not useful at this point. I don't think anybody expected where we would be today.
It's Governor J.B. Pritzker talking about concerns over the state budget due to the coronavirus. This is State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel includes practicing social distancing from his home in Springfield, Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us is the NPR Illinois reporter Sam Dunklaw. And our guests this week include Ken Kriz, distinguished professor of public administration at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also director of the Institute for Illinois Public Finance at UIS. And Amanda Cass, associate director of the Government Finance Research Center at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And Amanda and Ken, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you so much.
Well, both of you helped author a report on the coronavirus impact on the state budget. We'll talk more about what you found. We'll get to that in just a moment. But we're going to start out with Sam Dunklaw. Sam, we have been following the public health toll that the coronavirus is taking on the state of Illinois, and we want to hear about some of those numbers as well. Where do we stand at this point here as we record this show on Friday morning?
Yes, Sean. So the numbers continue to grow, and from all estimates, the numbers in terms of people who have been confirmed to have the new coronavirus, that is COVID-19, and the number of people who have died either from the disease or from complications from the disease is expected to grow. The state has not quite hit its peak yet. So as we record this show, 16,400 people have been confirmed to have the coronavirus across 81 counties. 528 people so far have died. Again, those are the latest numbers as we record this show. Later on this afternoon, the Department of Public Health will be giving more updated numbers. But the case total has grown by 1,000, sometimes 1,400 cases a day for almost the last week. The real number of people who likely have it is much higher because testing is limited. We've been saying that for weeks, and it still is the case. The state is hoping to test those who have COVID-19 for things called antibodies to determine when and how people become immune. That is an important step to the state considering when to reopen business and, you know, commerce throughout the state. But again, that's only just getting started. So these numbers are pretty stark and will likely continue to grow, Sean.
Well, Sam, a lot of the models that we've been hearing about show the state could peak with the number of daily cases as early as this weekend. The governor still has his stay-at-home order in place all throughout the month of April. For the rest of the month, he's tried to downplay talk of a return to normalcy about when that might actually occur. He's even said now that large gatherings like concerts and other big events should be canceled for the summer. So it's not as though Illinois is out of the woods yet.
No, not by any stretch. And I think the governor has really tried to play this as straight down the line as possible so that people know what to expect. The frank fact of the matter is, and as he said at the press briefing just the other day, is that, you know, until a vaccine against this virus is developed, no one, not the state of Illinois, not anyone in the country or anyone in the world can really be safe from it. That's what makes this virus so dangerous. There is no immunity. It has never been encountered in the human population before, and it's spread so quickly. We know that the state of the stay-at-home order is going to extend through the month of April. We've heard from even the federal government just this week that they're recommending that those social distancing policies continue even on into May. Bill Gates has said that as long as social distancing continues, we could be out of the woods possibly in June. No official has really made a determination definitively as to when this will end because public health experts need the flexibility to be able to handle the cases that are here and keep those who have not yet been infected safe.
Well, let's turn to the state's financial picture then. As I mentioned, there's a report from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, the University of Illinois, that's looking at the pandemic. And a key takeaway is the revenue hit. And what they said is it's expected to be worse than the Great Recession. Well, Ken Kriz, one of our guests this week, you worked on those revenue projections. So in dollars and cents, what are we talking about here?
Well, Sean, it really depends on the depth of the recession as well as the length of the recession. So, one of the issues with doing this type of work right now is there's just so much uncertainty about, well, pretty much everything. The range of economic estimates ranges from anything from a drop of about 2.5% in GDP for the calendar year of 2020, all the way down to 8 to 10% drop in GDP during the same period, and that's two very different worlds. That's just for some perspective, during the 2008-2009 recession, GDP fell by about 2.5%. And so, kind of on the low end, we're talking about an event that's very similar to 2008-2009. On the upper end, you're talking about something that could be 3 to even 4 times worse than that. And so, depending upon all of those things, I know that's like, saying depending on whether the world ends or whether it's sunny out tomorrow. But depending upon, the range of what could happen, our models indicate that we could see, revenue losses that are anywhere in the range of, on lower end, say, $4.5 billion over the next couple of years to as much as $28 billion over 4 years. So, again, that difference is not only how deep the recession is, but also how long it lasts. And if I knew the answer to that, I would probably be talking to you from a beach somewhere in the Caribbean. But unfortunately, I'm in my office in Springfield.
And that is such a broad range of numbers that we're talking about. At the same time, when will we have a better feel for that, do you think? Is it going to take a couple of years to really know just what the true impact is?
I think we'll have a much better sense during the summer. During the summer, some of the second quarter numbers will come out and we'll get a peek at what the third quarter might be. I think the vast consensus is that the recession will last certainly into the second quarter and through the second quarter, and then the recovery should start in the third quarter. Now, that's when we'll get a sense of when, whether we're going to see what we call a V-shaped recovery, so a relatively fast bounce back, a U-shaped recovery, which is a prolonged decline and then a recovery, or in the worst case, an L-shaped recovery, which will take a long time to work itself out.
We'll talk more about what some of the impact could be, but I want to turn to Amanda Cass. Amanda, you've been with us before in the program, often talking about pensions at the state level. We know that's been an issue for Illinois for a long time with this amount of pension debt, long-term debt. What impact does the current situation have on the long-term debt for the state when it comes to pensions?
Yeah, so we talk about this a little bit in the report, and it seems like what will happen is the pension systems, both the state pension systems and local pension systems, have their assets invested, and investment returns is a large source of their overall income and assets. So we expect that the assets of the pension systems are going to take a pretty big hit, which will increase the unfunded liabilities. And the state's annual contributions to the pension systems are dictated in part by the amount of the unfunded liabilities. So the worse off the pension systems are, the higher the state's required contributions. So what we expect is that this is going to end up increasing the state's required contributions to the pension systems, but that will likely lag some of the more immediate impacts, like the drop in revenue to the state's finances.
Now, Amanda, in the past, whenever the state has gotten into some trouble, they often turn to that pension contribution, and they sometimes have talked about giving less money to the pension system, at least in an interim, to get over a certain economic hump that they're dealing with. Would you think that that is something that's going to be on the table going forward here?
I think that's something that's really tricky. We saw Governor Pritzker floated an idea like that previously during his first year in office, and the credit rating agencies kind of immediately said, we don't like that, and indicated that that would have a negative impact on the state's credit rating. And with the credit rating agencies already coming out and saying that the outlook for Illinois is negative, I would think that if the state does anything to try and push out the timeline for paying down the unfunded liabilities, that it's going to have a negative impact on the credit rating for the state. So I think it's tricky from a policy perspective for the state.
Amanda, in the report, you and the other authors noted that the pension systems a few years ago were given a new way to assess the impact of market variations on their assets, where they were able to smooth them out over a period of time instead of taking them all at once. Will that have any impact on the contribution levels?
Yeah, that's one reason why we expect that the impact to the pension systems and the state's required contributions to lag a bit. So in the last recession, state lawmakers changed the way the assets are valued so that any increases or decreases that are different than the investment rate assumption are smoothed out over 5 years. And they did this in 2009. So rather than having a really big drop in the pension system's funded ratio all in 1 year, which would then spike up the state's contributions, they smooth it out over 5 years. So it smooths out kind of the volatility, but it doesn't eliminate increases in the state's contributions.
Charlie, I want to get you in on this as well, just your overall view of this report, but what else you're seeing when it comes to the state's budget, the state's finances, and what's happening in society right now.
Well, I think as the report notes, there's a whole lot of uncertainty. The thing we know for sure is that our revenues are going to decline. To what extent, we don't know. What impact might we get from having the federal stimulus money provided or from some of the changes from the Federal Reserve? That can't be measured yet either. So we're really doing our best to predict, you know, to predict things ahead of time. It would be like me saying, well, the White Sox are going to win X number of games this year, and we don't even know if there's going to be a baseball season. So it's very difficult. But if you harken back to what we've done in the past, we've, in fact, delayed pension payments for a couple fiscal years, and so that kind of got us over the hump. We've also sold bonds to raise money to make pension payments, so that's helped. We've also tapped into some of the 700 or so other specific accounts in the state treasury to borrow money to put into the general funds, which pays for most state expenses. So there's kind of ways to finesse things. And if you go back just a couple of years, we went a period with no budget at all, and we still managed to keep the state functioning, in part because some things happen automatically. We discussed pension payments, for example. Doesn't matter whether the legislature and the governor provide in the budget a single penny for the pension payments. The state law requires that a certain number be paid. Now, the number isn't high enough to cover the actuarial costs incurred in a given year, but it's part of a plan that was adopted some years ago to get us to 90% of funding for state pensions by the year 2045. Now, the impact on local governments is going to be a lot worse in some areas because some localities have their police and fire pensions even lower funded than than the state of Illinois. So there's a lot of uncertainty, and I'm just very thankful that there are people like Ken and Amanda out there trying to measure this for us to give us some idea of what the scope might be.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Sam Dunklaw, and our guests this week, Professor Ken Kriz and Amanda Cass. They helped put together a University of Illinois report on the impact the coronavirus is having on state finances. Ken, you were critical in that report of the state not being better prepared for what's going on right now. We've known for a long time that the state could, or we could see the country actually slip into a recession. Now the state seeing this cratering of the economy, and I think everybody on this panel would agree that the state's not really ready for that.
Sure. You know, and I want to say a couple things along those lines. The first thing is that, you know, this is nothing new. As Charlie said, this has been going on for a long period of time. In an accounting sense, the state really hasn't balanced the budget, you know, back. I've looked at financial reports going back to the 1980s, and it really just has not balanced things. So this has been a long-term problem. It's not unique to the current administration or even to the last administration. It's been going on for years. And you're right that the state was not in a good position in order to do this. Now, nobody could have imagined what's going to happen for you know, with COVID-19. There was absolutely no projection that this would happen. But we knew that eventually we had to have some sort of recession. We knew that eventually our revenue estimates would not be accurate. And so, you know, the state should have been in a better position. And I would also say that during the last couple of years, there have been good signs. The state actually passed a budget. That's the first good thing. The comptroller had a plan to actually establish a real rainy day fund. Now, one of the things that I argued at the time is we should first try and pay down the bill backlog before we worry about establishing a rainy day fund. But at least it's thinking in the right direction. It's thinking more in the long term. The other thing I'll say about this goes back to Charlie's point about the federal aid. The federal aid, as I understand it in the CARES Act, the first stimulus bill, is not enough to cover this hole. Under any of the projections we have, it was about $2.7 billion for the state. There's another roughly $2 billion for locals, but that state amount isn't enough to cover this. And that's what a number of states have already come out and said. And the Federal Reserve Bank, that's not like a grant. That's essentially the Federal Reserve stepping in and buying up short-term debt. So the state would have to still borrow, but then be able to sell that note to the Fed in essence, providing some liquidity and providing some money in the short run. But that has to be paid back. And so that's a bet, basically, that we're going to get a V-shaped recovery. We're going to get a fairly quick recovery because this type of short-term debt typically is issued for 3 months, 6 months, or a year. At the year is the extent of this we call tax anticipation note or revenue anticipation note market. And so it's really a bet that we're going to get a quick recovery. If we don't get a quick recovery, we're either going to have to roll over that debt at probably increasing interest rates as the economic condition, if the economic condition doesn't improve. And meanwhile, at the same time, the state is going to end up having to pay more on its borrowing, its long-term borrowing. The spread between long-term debt in Illinois and treasury bonds is widening. Because of this and because of the rating agency's concerns and a lot of other things. But so costs are going to go up because of this. And so I think what is, you know, that the chickens didn't come home to roost in a way that, you know, all of the decisions were made over the last couple of decades have really resulted in a situation where we don't have a rainy day fund like a lot of states do to be able to dip into. And we don't have the best fiscal situation to be able to fall back on.
Amanda, it's not just the state that's going to be feeling the impact here. Local governments, of course, are going to feel this as well. We were talking pensions earlier, state pension systems. What about the pensions for local police and fire? Many of those not in good shape even before this happened.
Yeah, I think that there, what's happening kind of at the state level trickles down some to local governments in a couple of important ways. So one is on the revenue side for local governments. So the state of Illinois shares part of its income in sales tax revenue with local governments. So local governments are going to see declined revenue from this because of the state's declined collections. And then the local governments are also going to see likely a decline in their own source tax collections. And then with pensions, the kind of same issue of the local police and fire pension systems' financial condition declining, and that in turn increasing local government's required pension contributions is also going to happen. And there are many communities that have pension systems that are significantly more underfunded than the state of Illinois' pension systems. And those places are often have less of an economic base than the state of Illinois. So these are communities that were already constrained in a number of ways prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. And so this is going to, I think, hurt those places potentially even more. And so that's kind of one thing I've been thinking a lot about is, you know, what are we going to do for these communities that were already really stressed prior to these events.
Let me turn back to the state government, because the legislature should be meeting right about this point in time, really getting into that home stretch for the legislative session and getting a budget put in place. Of course, there's no legislative session, hasn't been one for a few weeks now, and we don't know when lawmakers might actually return to the Capitol. And Sam, even though that's the case, they still have plenty of time to pass a budget for the next fiscal year.
Right. As it's been said to me in the past couple of sessions, you would be surprised what could get done in the last couple of days in May. You know, much of what happens during a normal session is, you know, we're meeting in committees, we're moving bills from first, second, third reading. The entire process is really drawn out, and really the bulk of the action, a lot of State House insiders know, happens in those last couple of days at the end of session when the session closes out in May and sometimes pushes a little bit into June. I've heard different things about when the legislature might reconvene. Of course, so many legislators are concentrated up in the Chicago area where the state is seeing the bulk of coronavirus cases. So, of course, moving them from there to Springfield would pose quite a public health risk right now. I've spoken with a few senators that say we could be looking at a summer session into June. As you mentioned, Sean, the state legislative leaders, House Speaker Mike Madigan and Senate President Don Harmon, have been reluctant to say when. But right now, the Senate, at very least, is meeting in working groups to try to hash out some of the minutiae that is usually hashed out in person in Springfield, so that whenever lawmakers do return, they will be able to get to the important business at hand, namely the budget and some other pressing matters.
Charlie, when Ken talked earlier about the fact that we may not know till sometime over the summer what the true impact is going to be here, does it make sense to try to put a full budget together, let's say by July 1st or even a little bit after that point? Or would it make sense to do something that's a little more temporary and revisit it as the year goes on?
Well, I suppose the more prudent thing would be to enact maybe a six-month budget. But the difficulty with that is that there are certain decisions that have to be made down the line that are going to be hard to do without knowing how much money is going to be there for the full year. Case in point is state aid to local schools. The school superintendents are going to have to make decisions based on how much money they know is going to be there about hiring teachers, adding programs, things like that, and they can't do it on a six-month basis. They have to have some certainty. So I think probably it would make more sense to go ahead and do a full-year budget, have it really pared down to bare essentials, and then come back after the first of the year and make adjustments where needed and as revenues would allow. And we don't really need to do the budget, get it ready to go until July 1st, which is the beginning of the fiscal year. Now, if we do it after June 30th, it requires, I'm sorry, after May 31st, it requires an extraordinary majority. But under these circumstances, I suspect that will be very feasible.
Amanda, go ahead. I think you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I was going to just chime in and remark that, as a reminder, the fiscal year 2021 budget that was introduced by the governor already kind of had two different scenarios in it, because the governor has been advocating for changing Illinois' income tax structure from being a flat rate to being a graduated system. And so, and that's going to be on the ballot for voters to vote on in the general election in November. So the kind of 2021 budget already was a kind of difficult one to be crafting, because there's two revenue scenarios being put forward. One, what does it look like if voters reject changing the income tax structure? And that would be a more austere budget, versus if they approve having a graduated structure, which would bring billions of dollars of more revenue into the state. The governor had detailed how that additional revenue would be spent. So you have that kind of scenario already was making 2021 challenging, and then we kind of throw in the challenges of declined revenue from COVID-19, makes crafting the 2021 budget that much more challenging.
On all of this, Ken, I'm going to give you the last word, about 30 seconds here, if you any advice you might give lawmakers that might be listening.
Well, the advice is to monitor as much as possible what's going on. One of the things, for example, that I'm talking about today is unemployment claims in Illinois, if you look at it as a percentage of the labor force, is actually somewhat better than the national picture. And so they need to be monitoring things like that to figure out how deep this recession is going to be, and then as we go on, how long it's going to be. Because like I said, that's really what's going to determine ultimately how much the pain is going to be.
All right. We're going to go to our notes from the field. And Charlie?
Well, one of the things that maybe many people were concerned about was having to renew their firearm owner identification card or the concealed carry license. Well, the state police this week issued emergency rules taking effect immediately, saying in essence that FOIA card holders will be able to keep their cards current during the coronavirus and for 1 year after termination of the disaster. And the same holds true for the concealed carry licenses.
Okay, and Sam Dunklaw?
Well, the Green and Libertarian parties, this comes from Capital News Illinois, are suing Pritzker and the State Board of Elections in federal court to be able to collect signatures in a way that allows them to practice social distancing. Third-party candidates need something like 25,000 signatures, five times the amount of established parties, think Republican, Democrat. And they say that they're at an unfair disadvantage so long as they're required to get those signatures in person like they are now. They want to be able to file those signatures electronically.
All right, that's all of the time we have for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Sam Dunklaw, and Ken Kriz and Amanda Cass. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.